And welcome to Shir in Targumim, Parshas Lech Lecha. The Shir this evening is sponsored in memory of Nechama Gittel Bas Yisrael HaLevi, whose yard site is tonight. The Neshama should have an Aliyah. She's much nachas ruach, and the Thomas is a nice Beethoven that the family is involved in. We were looking yesterday at the story of Hagar running away from Sarah, and we pointed out that the Targum gives a non-literal translation to what the Malach says to her. The Malach gives her a piece of good news: you're pregnant, you're going to give birth to a son. His name is going to be Yishmael. Ki shama Hashem el onyech, that Hashem has heard your suffering. We saw that the Targum Onkelos translates that Arei kabel Hashem tzlosich, non-literally, Hashem has accepted your prayers. And we pointed out yesterday that there are two ways to understand how the Targum Onkelos came to this conclusion. And that's how you get from God has heard your suffering to God has accepted your prayers. Either that the Targum understands that since the Pasuk speaks about God hearing, it must mean that there was something verbal that was conveyed to the Ribbono Shel Olam, not just that God saw, you'd say God saw her suffering. But here, when God hears her suffering, it means God heard what she uttered as a result of her suffering. In other words, it's implicit in the Pasuk that she davened, even though the Pasuk is not entirely explicit about that. Alternatively, some of the Mefarshim and the Targum Onkelos suggest that Onyech, which is usually translated as suffering, might be related to the word aniya, which means to say something loudly, and thus the word onyech literally would mean your outspoken tfilos, your outspoken prayers before the Ribbono Shel Olam. This isn't the only non-literal or striking translation that we have in this particular parsha. The next pasuk in particular lends itself to many interpretations, and we'll see that the interpretation of the Targum Onkelos is very, very striking. Yeah?
Last night you said that Targum Onkelos did not like to ascribe human senses to God's world.
Right.
So therefore, if that's a sheep and not to ascribe, so therefore he has to somehow deal with the word that she heard.
Shoma, right, that Hashem heard, right.
He converts that to Kibel.
Right.
But you can't Kibel suffering. But you can heal the tefillah that is the outcry from the suffering.
Right, although, again, just to contrast that for a moment with the Yonasan ben Uziel, so the Yonasan ben Uziel translates the phrase, Arum gelei kodam Hashem sigufich, which means that your suffering is revealed in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in theory, the Targum Onkelos could have said that as well, and also avoided, attributing human characteristics to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, it's striking that he chooses to focus on the idea of Hagar as being a mispalelis, someone who davens to the Ribbono Shel Olam.
I wonder if the fact that it says, look, take, she cried, maybe this implies also some sort of tefillah.
Right. So she cries in Vayera. Next week's parsha, the second time she runs around, she runs away, she cries. Here, so, she's hanging around. She's hanging around the well. We don't see that she cries over here, but again, the Targum Onkelos assumes that, there must have been some kind of tefillah. Perhaps the Targum Onkelos is assuming that if a malach appeared to her, it would make sense that she's sufficiently religious that she would have called out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You don't just get visited from a malach just like that, Perhaps that's what he's assuming. The next pasuk is a well-known pasuk, but also one very, very difficult to translate, and we'll see the Targum Onkelos has a unique translation. So, the malach says to Hagar, you're going to have a son. His name is going to be Yishmael. But wait, there's more. Let me tell you about this wunderkind, that you're going to have. V'huyah pera adam. He's going to be a pera adam. Yado bakol, his hand will be with everyone or in everything. V'yad kol bo, and the hand of everyone or everything will be with him. So what is that phrase? What do those phrases mean? Right? What does it mean? What does it mean that he's going to be a para adam? You know, first of all, right? So again, the term para adam is such a memorable one that it's made its way into common usage. And usually it's not a positive sort of thing. You know, when you get home the report card and the teacher writes, you know, your son in all of his subjects got a P for para adam, you know, it probably isn't the sort of thing that you would get a bumper sticker for and stick it on the back of your car. You know, my son was voted para adam of the year, you know, in Masifta, whatever. You know, para adam, the way we use the term, means a wild man, you know, a guy who's hard, yes, right, a guy who's a difficult person. How do we come to that? How do we come to that particular translation? Right? So most of the Mefarshim write over here that the word para has the implication of something wild, untamed, or free. Right? So the Ibn Ezra writes over here, Chafshi ben ha'adam, he's free among people. Ketam mishilach para chafshi. He quotes a pasuk in Iyov, Perek Lamed Tes, that links the term para to chafshi, to someone who is who's free, who's unfettered in any way. The Svarno writes that pere hu chamor habar, a pere is a wild donkey. So in other words, it doesn't mean that he will be free. It doesn't literally mean that he'll be free. It means that he'll be a donkey-like kind of person. Again, probably not meant in a complimentary kind of way. And in terms of the continuation of the pasuk, yodo bako v'yad kol bo, his hand will be with everyone, and the hand of everyone will be with him. So Rashi writes, yodo bakol, list him, right? That he will be a highway bandit, in other words, he'll be a wild man. Rashi writes on Pera Adam that he'll be ohev midboros, latsud chayos. He'll be a kind of person who lives being out in the desert, hunting animals, hunting wild animals. Yodo bakol, list him, he'll be a highway bandit. V'yad kol bo, and the hand of everyone will be against him. Hakol sonin oso u'miskarin bo, everyone will hate him, and everyone is going to start up with him. He, you know, everyone's going to be fighting against Yishmael, right? So that a very, very, offhand we would say that that is a very negative characteristic of Yishmael, which then leads to the following question. How did Hagar take this news? Right? The Malach comes to her and says, you know, you're pregnant, you're going to have a son. Wow, Gevaldik. Yeah, his name is Yishmael. He's going to be a guy who lives out on the lam, and he's going to be, you know, a highway bandit. Everyone's going to hate him, and everyone is going to have a bone to pick with him. I don't know. I'm not sure if I was the mother that I would feel so wonderful after receiving that news.
Couple that with the fact that she's out there running away from sorrow. And he's answering her prayers,
right,
of being afflicted. Now she's being afflicted and her son's going to be this, you know, it's coupled together.
Right. So so how does she react to it? So we don't really see her reaction in the Chumash to this particular piece of information. But it does, you know, a cursory reading of the Chumash does sound like she's not disturbed by it, and if anything, there's a little bit of an indication that it's a positive experience for her. The very next pasuk is Vatikra Shem Hashem Adover Eileha Ata El Roi, right? Again, we'll see how that's translated exactly, but she makes reference to the fact that Hashem has spoken to her. Ki Omra, she said, Hagam Halom Roisi Achare Roi, which Rashi, again, in general terms, translates as saying, wow, you know, not only were there malachim in the house of Avraham Avinu, but I merited to see a malach over here. So the impression you get from that is that she walks away from this experience with the malach feeling very positive. Wow, I saw a malach. If it's, wow, I saw a malach and och and vey, but my, you know, what he told me about what my kid is going to be is frightening, you might think that that would be conveyed in some way. We don't really see that. She doesn't seem to be disturbed by it. So either, you know, if that's a correct impression, one might say that she's not disturbed by the fact that her son is going to grow up to be a highway bandit and that everyone is going to hate him. You say, how could she not be disturbed by that? Well, I mean, in a sense, perhaps for somebody of her ilk, this is poetic justice. You know, Sarah made my life difficult, so my son's going to grow up and he's going to make everybody else's life difficult. It's along the lines of the Ramban that we read yesterday, where the Ramban, again, is critical of Sarah and Avraham Avinu for making Hagar's life difficult. And the Ramban says, and because of that, Yishmael and his descendants grew up to make life difficult for the Jewish people. Maybe Hagar, in hearing this prophecy from the Malach, didn't see anything negative about it. If anything, she saw it as HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewarding her for her suffering. So you're going to have a son who's going to make life difficult for others. Gevaldik. You know, I am going to put the bumper sticker on the back of my car. You know, my son was voted Pere Adam of the year. You know, I am going to feel very positive about that. Alternatively, maybe the Pasuk means something else, right? In other words, maybe she felt positive because the Pasuk is not quite as negative as we might think at this point. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe it's like we know that Yishmael was a Rasha, Yishmael was a Rasha, but he did a Tshuva of Murat at the end. Maybe it was a challenge for her to be responsible for him. Maybe her Tshuva, it's not that she forced him to do Tshuva, but maybe her Tshuva helped give him the Siyata Dishmaya.
Right, okay, could be. Could be, but again, let's just focus on what she knows right now. All she knows is the Malach told her he's going to be Pera Adam, Yadu Bakov, Yad Kobo. That's all she knows. She doesn't know from Tshuva. She doesn't. Right now, she just knows about this prediction about what her son is going to be. So the Unculus has an interesting translation of this pasuk. By the way, I should point out, before we get to the Unculus, that Yonasan ben Uziel translates very similarly to Rashi, as we saw last night as well. The Yonasan ben Uziel writes, V'iu Yahave medame la arod. He's going to be, like the Sfarno says, he's going to be like a wild donkey, like a mule of sorts, Bivnei Nasha, among people. Yadoy Yisparu Mibali Devavoi. He's going to seek revenge against the people who hate him. V'dei Debali Devavoi Yitoshtun Lav Asha Be. And those people who hate him will try to hurt him. Right? Again, very similar to Rashi. He's going to be fighting with people. They're going to be fighting back against him. He's going to be a very combative kind of person, as Rashi indicates. Again, the Yonasan ben Uziel in that respect is very, very similar to Rashi's interpretation. The Unculus writes differently. He starts off, "Uhu yehei marod be'enosha." He is going to rebel against people. So first of all, how do you get the notion of rebellion from Pere Adam, right? So apparently the Unculus understands, along the lines of the Ibn Ezra, that Pere just means something wild, something unfettered. And basically, by the Targum Unculus, by saying that he's going to rebel against people, means he's not going to be subjugated to anyone, right? He's going to be a free man. No one's going to be able to put him down. Nobody's going to be able to tame him. He's going to be independent. Marod be'enosha, right? I think, you know, he's going to be independent in that way. Hugya hate sarich lekola. He will need everyone. Va'af b'nei enosha yahon srichin le. And people will need him. So first of all, what does that mean? He's going to need people. People are going to need him. And how does that fit together, even with the beginning of the sentence, according to the Targum Unculus? He's going to rebel against people, but he's going to need people. Right? So the way the Mefarshim understand over here is that the Targum Unculus is translating the word yad in the sense of business. Right? Giving something miyad liyad implies business transactions. So Yado Bakov, Yad Kobo, means he will do trade with everyone and everyone will do trade with him. So in other words, he's going to be independent. He's not going to be subjugated to anyone in a political sense. But economically, he's going to be involved with the whole world. And indeed, we find, you know, that this was fulfilled within the time span of Sefer Bereishis. Who are the Yishma'elim? Just a few parashios later, they're traveling merchants. Vinei Orchas Yishma'elim Ba'a Migilad. Right? How does Yosef get sold down to Mitzrayim? A traveling caravan of Yishma'elim. Why Yishma'elim? Because the Yishma'elim were a bunch of nomadic merchants who were going around from place to place. So that actually is the fulfillment of this promise that was made to Hagar. And the truth is, when you think about that from Hagar's perspective, that's quite a positive thing. Remember, she was subjugated to Sarah. So the fact that Yishmael is described as someone who's morod be'enosha, which, the way I understand it in context, doesn't mean he's going to be a rebellious type. It simply means he's going to be an independent type. He's going to be a person who's not going to be subjugated to anyone. You know, he'll live out in the desert. He's going to make the rules. Nobody's going to tell him what to do, right? He's going to be the very antithesis of the experience that Hagar has had with Sarah. But at the same time, he's not going to be a Nebuch living out there, you know, a hermit, you know, with his little, his little shack somewhere in the middle of the desert. He's going to be carrying on business with the whole world. So that's, you know, that's not so bad. You know, if I was Hagar hearing that, I'd probably be very happy with that prediction. Wow, an independent contractor, you know, who's going to work for himself, make his own hours, not be subject to anybody else's whims, and is still going to make a great deal of money because he's going to be trading with the whole world.
Even in that time, he has all the oil.
Right, you're right. In other words, it came true in Sefer Bereishis, and it's still true today. Right, still true today. Independence, right? No one's going to tell us what to do. I mean, there's an element of that, certainly. And we do trade with the whole world, you know. That's the Targum Onkelos is literally true. You know, we see in our own days. So that's an interesting interpretation that he has. So her reaction to that is the following. Vatikra Shem Hashem Hadover Eleha Ata Kel Roi. She calls the name of Hashem who speaks to her, "You are the God who sees me." So here too, the Targum Onkelos translates the beginning of the Pasuk in a non-literal way and goes back, you know, to this portrayal which we've seen already, you know, once, that Hagar is someone who is a mispalelas, she's a davener. Vatikra Shem Hashem Adover Eleha, she calls the name of Hashem who speaks to her. So again, without the Targum, I would probably translate that pasuk as, she gave a name to Hashem. Vatikra Shem Hashem Adover Eleha. Right? The Targum translates, Vitzalias Bishmoda Hashem, Dismaleil Ima. She davened in the name of Hashem who had spoken to her. In other words, the Targum essentially understands that Vatikra Shem Hashem is the same as the expression as Vatikra Bishem Hashem. Right? Calling out in the name of Hashem is more readily understood as a term that means davening. Right? It says about Avram Avinu, Vayikra Shem Avram Bishem Hashem. Calling out in the name of Hashem is davening. So even calling the name of Hashem is also a reference to davening. And this, by the way, many years later, this is the way that the Sfarno understands the Pasuk as well. Vatikra Shem Hashem, writes the Sfarno, Hine Kriya Shem Hashem, Hi Hatfilo. Right? The meaning of calling the name of Hashem is Tfilo. So she davens once again to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which again seems to indicate that she's very pleased with what the Malach told her, which according to the Targum Onkelos, it's easy to understand why she's pleased with what the Malach told her. The Malach told her she's going to have this child. Again, like we said, it's going to be an independent contractor. You know, he's going to deal with everybody, but he's going to maintain his independence. And she says to Hashem, Atah Kel Roi. Literally, you are the God, it would seem like one would translate, as the God who sees me. What does that mean? So the Unkelus does not translate it that way. You are the God who sees me. At hu eloka chaze kola. You are God who sees everything. What about who sees me? Ro'i, no? So here, Rashi helps us understand this Targum. Even though Rashi, interestingly, does not reference the Targum, but he writes as follows. Nakud chataf komots. Right? The word is not roi with a cholom, but rather roi with a chataf komots under the resh. What's the difference? So says Rashi, this is one of those diktuk Rashi, so you're supposed to skip it, but okay, you'll be meichomi, we'll read it anyway. Nakud chataf komots, mitnei shehu shem dover. Roi is a noun, right? Meaning, not you are the God who sees me, but you are rather Eloka Hore'iya. You are the God of seeing. Right? Ro'i is a noun. You are the God of sight. You are the God who sees. Right? And as the Yud at the end is not the possessive, the one who sees me, but it's the grammatical form, it's a poetic form of sight. You are the God of sight. And in what sense are you the God of sight? So Rashi quotes from the Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, Shiroeh be'elbon shel aluvim. You see the plight of those who are downtrodden. You know, you saw what was going on with me, but it's not just about me. You see in general. You are the God who sees. So based on that, Rashi and his pointing out that the word is ro'i as opposed to ro'i, the word roi is going to appear at the end of the pasuk. So, but according to Rashi and Rashi, again, it seems like this is not just Rashi. This is Rashi just pointing out what we would have otherwise missed in the pasuk, right? Roi and roi are two different things, right? So you are the God of sight, the way Rashi translates it. So we can easily see how that leads into the Targum Unkelus. Atu eloka chaze kola. You are the God who sees everything. You know, part. Ribbono shel Olam, you see everything that's going on. What does that mean in context? So again, we can speculate, but apparently Hagar has had an aha moment over here, so to speak, you know, a illuminating moment, where A, she realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu even cares about her, right? Despite the fact that she's not on the level of Avram and Sarah, she knew that Avram and Sarah had a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but now she realizes that extends even to people on her, like her, on a lower level. Number two, the Ribbono Shel Olam sees into the future. He sees what's going to be with Yishmael. He sees what his future is going to be. That may have been something that Hagar didn't fully appreciate, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really sees everything. So Hagar is depicted by the Targum Unkelus as a spiritual person. Again, not on the level of Avram and Sarah, but you know, certainly it's fair to say that she's davening. She davens twice to the Ribbono Shel Olam according to Targum Unkelus, and she's overwhelmed. She describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, in very, very beautiful terms, as the God who sees everything. You know, she's quite a spiritual person. It's not hard to appreciate after going through these passages in the Targum, not hard to appreciate that which Chazal tell us, that Hagar is the same person as Keturah, whom Avram Avinu ultimately marries after the death of Sarah, and she's a very righteous person. One gets the impression. Otherwise, Avraham Avinu would not have married her, right? So she's not a nobody. I mean, that's what we take away from from these psukim. So she comments as well at the end of the pasuk, ki amra, she said, hagam halom roisi acharei roi. What is Hagam Haloma Ro'isi Acharei Ro'i? So Rashi writes, again somewhat famously, Loshen Tema. It's a question. Hagam Halom Ro'isi Acharei Ro'i? Here too have I seen after I saw? V'chisvuro ha'isi sh'af halom b'midboros. Halom means there, according to Rashi. Did I ever dream that even there, in the middle of the desert, ro'isi shluchav shomakom, that I would see angels from Hashem in this barren place in the desert? Acharei ro'i osam b'veso shel Avram? Yeah, I saw the angels in the house of Avram Avinu. Shesham ha'isi regila liros malachim. Right? Hagar, even as the maidservant of Avram Avinu, saw Malachim in the house of Avram Avinu. V'teidash ha'isa regila lirosam, writes Rashi, and I'll prove to you that she was accustomed to seeing Malachim. Sharei monoach ro'asa malach pa'machas v'omer mos nomus. Right? Later on in Sefer Shoftim, Monoach sees a Malach and he's knocked out of his senses. You know, oh my gosh, we're going to die. I saw a Malach. What's going to be? Right, and you know the Malachim four in a row appear to Hagar, and they start speaking to her, and she speaks back like it's just a regular everyday occurrence. Yeah, I see a Malachim every day. She saw Malachim every day. She saw Malachim regularly in the house of Avraham Avinu. So she comments, according to Rashi, I never would have thought that even out here in the desert I would see Malachim the same way I saw them in the house of Avraham Avinu. That's how Rashi interprets the phrase. The Unkelos seems to interpret similarly, but again with a little bit of a twist. Arei Ameris, she said, Af ano shorisi chazia basar de'iskali li. I as well began to see after it appeared to me. What does that mean? So first of all, it's interesting to note that the Targum translates at least one word seemingly different than Rashi. Rashi translates the word halom as there, you know, out there in the desert. The Unkelos introduces a word shorisi, I began, into his translation of the Pasuk, and it would seem that that's how he translates the word halom. In other words, that, you know, I began, you know, seeing acharei ro'i, after I saw. What does the Targum Unkelos mean? I began to see, even I began to see, after it was revealed to me. Not entirely clear, but perhaps we can suggest the following pshat in Targum Unkelos, and again, it would fit in with the beginning of the pasuk the way Unkelos translates it. Rashi speaks of Hagar acknowledging that she's seeing Malachim a second time, you know, even in a foreign environment, even out here in the desert. I think Targum Unkelos perhaps is saying, Hagar is saying that I had an epiphany after these Malachim appeared to me. And I began to see things differently. Afano shoriso chazya. I began to see things. Basar de'iskalili, after the Malachim appeared to me. What did I begin to see after the Malachim appeared to me? I became aware of the fact that ata kel roi, that you are God who sees everything. Right? In other words, that notion, the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is fully mashkiach, he fully watches over the world, was something that I didn't quite internalize until these malachim came to me. If we interpret that that's what the Targum Unkelos is saying, so then the pasuk really flows. She said, Ata kel roi ki amra, because she said, I have now begun to see, I have now begun to understand this concept, acharei ro'i, after having seen these malachim opened my eyes to a better understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, it gives us a picture of Hagar as, you know, a spiritual person, not someone, again, not on the level of Avram and Sarah, but not someone to be dismissed lightly either. Wish everyone a good Shabbos, and Be'ez Hashem will continue next week. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer.